This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 3rd of November, 1955. The title of this lecture is The Most Important Items of the 4th London ACC. This lecture is 62 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
This morning, which is the 3rd of November, 1955, first morning lecture of the 4th London ACC, we're going to take up a review of all the material we have covered so far in this course. Now, it may seem to you that we have not covered any material in this course, but when I have gone through this, you will be sufficiently confused that I will have to give you a second lecture through which you can sleep. And you will probably be able to make this then very easily this morning. If I gave you this lecture second this morning, you would go out of here and not be able to audit, so we will get around that by giving it to you first. So is everybody prepared to spin?
Yeah.
Very, very good. Fine. I'll give you this then. This is simply the most important items of the 4th London ACC, which is the name of this lecture. The materials which I'm going to give you here, I've already drawn up in a bit of an outline form, and I will have it mimeographed and give to you, so you needn't worry too much about notes. But let me assure you that none of the materials which I am giving you here verbally will be on the notes except the title of each one. And these are all numbered, so if you put down the number, it'll compare to your notes. Now, let us go over immediately the list itself, and I'm simply going to read you the list so as to stagger you a little bit, because you probably don't think we've covered anything. You probably think that this is all rather old hat, that the material has been simply rehash of old material and so forth. And however, there has been some new material, some brand new material, which has entered in here, and it is as follows. 1, first postulate. 2, confusion and stable datum. 3, auditing presence and the rudiments of the 6 levels. 4, communication bridge. 5, rising ARC and the PC. 6, restarting sessions. 7, time continuum. 8, not knowingness. 9, energy and terminal running. 10, power of choice. 11, tolerance of stupidity. 12, tolerance of motion and no motion, which is randomity. 13, decisional processing. 14, specialized language. 15, the new meaning of Scientology. And the restabilizing of other professions. Now that's actually, in essence, what we have covered here in these many weeks. And there's very little of this that is old. We have spoken before about some of these things, but not in the levels that we have talked about them here in the 4th London ACC. And this 7, which is time continuum, we can now state with sufficient precision to handle the situation. Time continuum is handled by not knowingness. Not only can we look at a time continuum, but we can also disconnect from a time continuum by our present mechanisms. Now, these are the various things we have covered. And these materials you are actually expected to know. If you know these materials, well, then people know you've been to the 4th London ACC. And if you don't know these materials, they will suppose otherwise. Now, there will not be any examination on this course. There will be no final examination of any kind. But all the certificates will be in my hot hand. Now, I'm not looking to you to do anything spectacular with your pre-clear. All I want you to do is simply clear your pre-clear. And the schedules, which we are going to schedule, will be in the direction of the last many days of this course in the direction of tremendous quantities of auditing, practically no lectures to amount to anything, practically no auditors' conferences, just a tremendous quantity of auditing. Appeal to you?
Yes.
All right. Now, let's take up these materials, the most important items of the 4th London ACC. Now, just exactly how I would take up these materials in an hour that we have already spent almost 70 of hours on, it'd be quite a trick, but I want to show you that you could state in a relatively short space of time what I have told you and what you had discovered from it. It can be stated. It could not really be described very widely, and this hour's lecture would be really no substitute for the other lectures. But nevertheless, I'll give you this material. Let's take number one, the first postulate. What we know as the first postulate is the statement by the Thetan which removes him from native state. A Thetan in native state knows all. He knows all. He can experience all. Everything is predicted or postulated. He has the capability of a totality. There is no wider statement could be made. Now, this ability has to be reduced or cut down in order for the Thetan to have a game. And a game proceeds on the basis of denial of some portion of his ability or activity. He must deny something in order to have a game. He denies the other side, in other words. He denies an ability. He denies a possession. He makes his first mock-up and denies it was his. And he has a game then, himself versus the first mock-up he makes. You see how this would be. All right. Now, his main wealth is knowingness. This is his most total wealth. And so the most sweeping denial which he can make is a denial of his own knowingness. So his first postulate is, I don't know. I don't know about mock-ups. You see, he says, I don't know about the future. I don't know about the past. And with the first postulate, we get the invitation to time, you might say. And he then makes the second postulate. Now, because there is a first and second postulate, there is time. There is no time before he makes the first postulate. There's no time at all. He makes the postulate then at the beginning of the time stream. So the first postulate becomes basic on all further postulates. And any time he makes this postulate, he has started, in some essence, a new time stream. Any time he does this. He said, I do not know Joe. You see, now he knows Joe. You know, he makes Joe's acquaintance. Well, it's ridiculous that he doesn't know Joe. Of course he knows Joe. But he becomes aware of a not knowingness of Joe, and we have a time continuum begun with Joe. To undo his knowingness of Joe and put it back in total classification and out of specialized knowledge of Joe, we have to run out then or restore his ability in the sphere of Joe. So we have him say again that he doesn't know Joe. And all of a sudden he realizes he does know Joe and he knew him all the time. So we have our first postulate, which is the departure from total state. And this total state we call native state of the Thetan. He departs from this by his first postulate, which usually is, I don't know something. Now, his second postulate is, I know a particular. That's his second postulate. I know blank. I know a particular. He says, I don't know, in order to get going, and then he says, I don't know a certain particular. Pardon me, he says, I don't know, and then he says, I know a certain particular. This is the way he gets going on his time stream. You see this? I just jumped a little click on the track. I'm mostly running this on automatic. His third postulate is, I don't know the particular. That's his third postulate, which means forget. This is liberally translated to forget, the third postulate. And this is not ising the second postulate. Now he says, I know that Joe is a dog or something of the sort. And then he says, I don't know Joe is a dog. Now we see this as a high degree of particularity. And this means then that he's forgotten what he knew. And now he does the next step, which is the fourth postulate, which is he remembers. He remembers that Joe is a dog. Now remembering is an alter isness of the not isness of the second postulate. Therefore, nobody using remembering long or consistently will ever achieve anything but a further bog. Memory is a trap. It's clear on down the line. It does not run out anything. A psychotherapy depending for its modus operandi upon remembering would not make anybody well. It makes somebody feel better if you use it for a short time. It's a limited process, you see. Limited, very, very limited. There's no reason why, however, a thetan should not be able to alter is a not is and get away with it. But he ordinarily doesn't. He denies his ability to do that, too. All right, so we have native state, which is a totality of knowingness cut down by the first postulate, which starts the time stream, and that is, I don't know, and then we have that don't know canceled out and made a lie by his statement, second postulate, I know, particular, and then we have forgettingness entering in with the third postulate, which is, I don't know that particular, and the fourth postulate enters in with a recollection of the third postulate. So by recalling this not-isness, the third postulate, we get memory as such, and we have then the really basic mechanism of the mind. There's more we can understand about native state. There's more we can understand about these postulates. There's more that we can do with these things than we have done, of that I'm sure. But also, I am very sure that this is the basic map. Because a great many things can be done with this basic map that have not been done before. All right. The second thing we have is confusion and the stable datum. Here is a very important new concept. The I don't knows result into confusions. The various particles of a confusion are really I don't knows of one kind or another. They are particles which are out of control. These particles are basically postulates of one kind or another, and they float free or are not pinned down on a positive time continuum, and so we get that thing known as a confusion. We get particles going in random directions. Now, what is a confusion? A confusion is defined as plus randomity. Plus randomity is a confusion, and that depends upon what the viewpoint of the individual is. As I said, one horse going down a small town street could be a confusion to some people, and would be a motionless thing to other people. And so we have the other side of this thing, confusion, which is a total absence of confusion, which is not a no motion, really, but a one motion. And this is a stable datum. Now, if we wish to bring order into a confusion, it is only necessary for us to, we are not really differentiating here too much between confusion of data and confusion of particles. They're more or less the same breed of cat. Confusion of particles is a picture of a confusion of data, and so we can handle these things rather carelessly at this time, or we think we can. And the confusion and stable datum, axiom 53, a stable datum is necessary for the alignment of data. A science we have in the logics of Dianetics is an alignment of data. Therefore, we must have a stable datum on which to align all other data. And a science would be then a body of information which would be in confusion except for some stable datum. There is a point of assumption or a stable datum in any science. The stable datum of physics, it's very easy to pick these out, by the way. The stable datum of physics is conservation of energy. And this is their stable datum, and they align all other data to the conservation of energy. Therefore, they make a great many errors because energy can be created and energy can be destroyed. But nevertheless, their stable datum is there. If you shake this stable datum too much, you get a confusion. The nuclear physicist thinks that in the field of nuclear physicist, he has overridden the stable datum of basic physics. He thinks that he has altered conservation of energy, and as such, he finds himself in confusion. He therefore is not dealing with a science today, but a speculation. He is in a confusion. You talk to these chaps, and by the way, I speak from quite intimate knowledge of these people, that they don't know whether it's raining or August. They tell you this. We do not know where we're going, what we're doing. Never had such horrible things happen to me in my life as to have to look over these various equations. They're just absolutely maddening. You don't quite know. You have to experiment, and then you find something different. Any speculation you make is adrift. You get the idea. The nuclear physicist blew out of existence the stable datum of conservation of energy, he thinks. He didn't know, really, whether he blew it out or not, but he's no longer depending on it. And then, no longer depending on it, he finds himself basically a physicist, which he shouldn't be. He should be a philosopher. Basically a physicist in a confusion. Now, if he were to take out the stable datum of nuclear physics that he has assumed and find another one, he would get a less confused picture. Now, the stable datum on which he depends today in nuclear physics is that its basis is physics. That's an error. See, that's a flagrant error. So not only has he unstabilized physics, but he has really unworkable stable datum in the field of nuclear physics, and so he is completely adrift. Now, you get the idea of where we go. We shake up a datum, or we shake up a science, and we have the sciences unstabilizing themselves, you see. Therefore, to construct a science, it is only necessary to assume. Now, please get this. You don't have to find it. It is only necessary to assume a stable datum. Just assume it, and then align all other data to it, and you will have something that looks very like a science and would actually, in any university, pass for one. Everybody would be absolutely fascinated with what you had done. You see, as long as your stable datum seemed even vaguely reasonable. What you did was take some assumption and build from there on any subject, and you would have then what would amount to a science. It all aligned by, married to, and dependent on this stable datum. Now, if we move the stable datum, we get a shake-up in the entire structure of the science. The stable data of the various sciences have at one time or another been on wide agreement assumed by a great many men. And these assumptions then and there have clarified a great many random data, and that's why they are sciences. And you wish to shake any of those sciences up, and you discover this fantastic thing that maybe that stable datum is not actually it. You see, it's not actually it, it's merely the stable datum. Now, please, as you're going over this material, differentiate in your own minds between the real stuff, you know, that sort of feeling, the this is the kingpin, you know, and we sort of regard it as something there made out of chromium, beryllium, steel. You know, and people have found this thing, you see, and this is very valuable, and everything somehow or other depends on this tremendously reliable, non-corrosible form. Please get that out of your mind, because you can assume a stable datum for any body of data, see? The stable datum of any science is not necessarily a real, honest, to goodness, gee whiz stable datum, you see? It's the agreement on what is the stable datum that gives it its chromium, beryllium, steel aspect. Got it? All right. Therefore, if you understand that thoroughly, you can understand aberration. A personality is a group of data or expressions or aesthetics which have attempted to align themselves upon various stable data for their various spheres of activity. That's personality. And they might not be right, you understand, but they're chromium, beryllium, steel. Now, they might not be right, but they're certainly there. Now, we can get the most outrageous assumption imaginable. Let's take a woman bases her femininity on this stable datum. All men are ugly. See? And she says, therefore, I will continue to be a woman. And women exist to better the world of man and to remedy this ugliness. Now let's go on and align all stable data to this. It's so obviously, however, incorrect that it can easily be disturbed. Now you understand that the assumption of this stable datum, the assumption of this stable datum lays a pattern of alignment which is easily unstabilized. People can come along and convince her that all men are not ugly. And there goes her femininity. See? All we have to do is shake up the stable datum and we'll get confusion through the remainder of the data allied or aligned to it. You see this? All right. If you understand that, you will see then that aberration is the assumption of stable data by anyone, usually to align an existing confusion. And out of desperation, they are liable to assume some very interestingly aberrated, you might say, or non-stable, stable data. You see? Now, if you understand that, you understand aberration. A person has just had a lot of confusion. He conceives there to be a lot of confusion. He decides to explain it. He maybe has to explain it rapidly, urgently, something like that. And he says, well, he said, I can understand this situation. All petty officers eat hashish. They're hashish eaters. And therefore, he understands petty officers. He's comfortable with petty officers. He can talk to them. He can take orders from them. He knows they all eat hashish. And everything aligns to this, and therefore they don't have to make sense. They're not reasonable. People expect him to obey them, and he goes on and does so. And he explains this fact to himself, that he's out of agreement with them by this stable datum. He goes on this way. He's a happy man in the service. He's not nervous in the service at all. And one day finds a petty officer who doesn't eat hashish and is proven to him. Well, you wouldn't look for this as the pin which unstabilized him and landed him in the neuropsychopathic electronic shock department. You wouldn't look for this as it. But you would say, somebody came along and proved to this man that petty officers didn't eat hashish. You mean that drove him crazy? Look, it's crazy in the first place. But we don't care how crazy it was in the first place. He only had a liability because of this stable datum for one reason only, and that was because it was easily disturbed. See, he chose a stable datum, unfortunately, that was easy to shake up or disturb. Insufficient evidence supported this, and yet it was really the pattern of his sanity. The totality of the confusion called petty officers tended to align now, and he could be comfortable. He could live with it. He wasn't getting into a high randomity, a plus randomity scene. Petty officers could be rushing in all directions. And he felt, oh, well, petty officers, you know, nothing to it. You get the idea. Now, a so-called neurotic or psychotic personality is not just one which has built its data on aberrated data, that is to say, unprovable or unstable data. This is not a good definition of a neurotic or psycho personality. It's not a person who has built his world on unprovable or unsubstantiable data. See, that's not a definition. It's a person who has built his world on easily disturbed stable data, who has then had them disturbed. And whose tolerance for plus or minus randomity was poor in the first place. So we go back and look for tolerance of plus and minus randomity as a more intimate rationale behind neurosis and psychosis. But in its mechanisms of workout, we can do anything we want, but we will keep running into this fact, that it was the fact that his stable data could be unstabilized that finally wound him up in an interesting chaos. See? That, as far as we're talking about stable data is concerned, it's the fact that he selected data which could be unstabilized, not that he selected data which was untrue. See, that was his. Now you'll find a little kid will select stable data. He'll select all kinds of stable data. He'll have stable data about teachers. He'll have stable data about arithmetic. It would be very interesting, I'm sure, to Newton or somebody. It'd probably be fascinating. You mean you're building the world of arithmetic on that stable datum? You know? Gee, no. Actually, people's ability to work arithmetic is usually the assumption of some stable datum on the subject of arithmetic, which just doesn't hold together at all. Yet we reach in and shake this stable datum up. What have we got? We've got somebody who's neurotic or psychotic on the subject of arithmetic. See, it didn't matter how bad the data was. That's what we've got to get across. It didn't matter whether it was good or bad. There is no test of good or bad till agreement sets in. There's no test, really, of it. He simply assumes good or bad and so on. Stable datum is always an assumption. Therefore, a person whose stable data is too badly unstabilized will become himself confused. He couldn't tolerate the confusion in the first place. That's why he wanted a stable datum for it. So we put the confusion back into action again by disturbing the stable data. Now, there's a great deal to be understood, to be known, to be handled about this. But remember that a confusion is a series or large number of not knows. See, that's what it is, basically. A confusion is a bunch of not knows which are not aligned. And also a confusion can be this, a great many unaligned second postulates. Unaligned, disconnected second postulates. We probably have a better definition of it. All right, do we have this now? Okay, three. Now, just to depart from technology a bit, we have a new auditing presence in 4th London ACC. A new auditing presence, a new modus operandi, a new way you go about it. We have the presence of the auditor as somebody who is rehabilitating the power of choice of the preclear. Now, this gives us a new look at auditing. It gives us a brand new look. The presence of the auditor is that of a friend, a counselor. His ability must embrace a complete control of the preclear, a complete communication with the preclear, and a total ARC with the preclear, all at one and the same time. And that's the trick, but you can do it, and what do you know? You have been doing it, haven't you? This is almost a feel. You see, it's hardly a descriptive thing, but because it's a mood. It's something that you create as an extant social position with your preclear. See, it's a creation of something. You're not challenging. You're not chopping him up one side down the other. We're not pushing his nose into it. We're not hurling him against the wall. We're not trying to make him face up to his aberrations and so forth. We assume that we are competent enough in the handling of sufficiently powerful tools that if we can just get him just a little bit to turn his face in our directions, he's a dead duck. We do this quietly. It is the steel gauntlet, definitely, in a boxing glove, in a velvet glove, in a very delicately poised and artistic hand. We find that this works, and it works better, and it works faster. We have grown into it here sufficiently smoothly that it is a feel. It is the way you audit, you know. It's the way you go about the situation. And the oddity is that it's sufficiently good that only in those places, those very few places in the unit, where the guy just really hasn't gotten the word on this yet, are we finding any skids or lack of good progress in cases, you know. So this we'll still have to work on a bit. And it, of course, has parts. It has assumptions. It has a definite modus operandi. It is not something that just is an undescribable mass of attitude, you know, which you either just pick up or you don't. You know, a lot of fellows go to Oxford to pick up the atmosphere. Of course, there are those fellows who said they should go to Cambridge to pick up the atmosphere, but there are chaps who simply go there for several years just to absorb the atmosphere of the place. And I suppose you could describe that atmosphere, but if you could describe that atmosphere very well, then you would be able to create in somebody, by instruction, over a very short pace of time, an Oxford atmosphere. Get the idea? If you could picked out its various points and you knew exactly what it was, you could really make an Oxfordian atmosphere. You didn't have to soak him in Oxford for 4 years. See, good. Therefore, we have similarly a Fourth London ACC auditing atmosphere. Get the idea? All right. We know its parts, however. Now, the rudiments and the six levels are, of course, its parts. And it's no part here to go into these. There are several other little items that entered in with the rudiments and the six levels of processing that went with these. And one of the things that makes this a smooth road is number four. And this was new. This was new to this unit. Brand, brassy, new. And that was the communication bridge. Not even the word had been used before. The communication bridge. And the communication bridge consisted of keeping contracts with the preclear. And the best way that you could describe it is unmaking old contracts and making new contracts with the preclear. That's a method of describing it. It bridged one process or state of beingness to another process or state of beingness with these exact steps. We noted that his cognition or his flattening of the process had brought him to an end of track for that process or at that time. Or we had some reason to stop that process. See? Whatever reason we had to stop the process, we threw in a communication bridge. And that was to inform him by lightening up our attitude on the process, by interjecting a few more comments one way or the other with him, that we were going to stop the process. And then we told him we were and asked him if it was going to be all right with him if we did. And in other words, we scrapped the contract known as that process. We said, we're not, it's all right with you if we stop this process now. And he said, all right. If he said no, then we ran it a bit more and asked him if it was all right to stop it now, you see. In other words, we got him to break the contract on that process. End of cycle is run. And then we stopped the process by telling him that we have stopped the process. He doesn't sit there in an expectancy of another auditing command or something of the sort. Now, with this stopping of the process, we go over the fact of having run the process. And by two-way communication, which we know is an as-ising mechanism, we clean up the auditing which we have just done on that process. We discuss its results. We discuss the situation, and then to some slight degree run the rudiments all over again. Only it's a very slight degree. We call his attention to the atmosphere. We just by talking about things, by discussing things with him, by discussing his case, by discussing ourselves, we reestablish to some degree the reality of the session. Now, all these things can be done very fast and deftly, although they have quite a few parts. And then we discuss with him the possibility, you know, nice gradient scales, that we're now going to start another process. We discuss this with him, and we talk about this, and we talk over the process with him. And he may want to know, what's the goals of this process? And we say, well, it's supposed to do this or that. We don't particularly care whether we tell him the truth of why we're running the process. We don't care about that. We don't care about that. All we care about is that he is satisfied with what we have talked about. We get that? We're not being sly characters. We're just not going to go in to an 8-hour lecture on the subject of pan-determinism, that's all. We're not going to give him all of his cognitions before he makes them. We're going to say, well, the goal of this process is to make you capable of having more viewpoints on situations. And the fellow says, that's fine, good roads, good weather. And you say, well, now the auditing command is so-and-so, and you tell him whatever the auditing command was, the existence of what wouldn't you mind determining or some such thing. And that's it, and he's got it now. He understands what that means. The words are not going to go spinning around in his head without any meaning behind them. We've got that going, and now we're going to start the process, and we tell him so. And then we give him his first auditing command, and away we go. Now, how long does it take to put in a communication bridge? It's got a lot of parts, a lot of things you do. You slow down and stop one process and with an end of cycle, broken agreement on it. You get your pre-clear into the situation of the auditing session, the room, he's there, you're there. You discuss this process. You make sure he's not stuck in it any place, the one you've just run. You roll up the new process and start a new one. It takes just this long to run. You run it sufficiently long that you do not overthrow the pre-clear's expectancies or establish expectancies that will not be lived up to, see? We take care of an agreement on the expectancy, on the past process, and the new one. In other words, we move him slowly out of one cycle and end it and start another cycle, and there we go. How long does it take to do that? Well, it takes as long as your pre-clear needs it. And you find that on some PCs you would do very well to put in a 15, 20-minute, half-hour, or even a two-hour communication bridge, you know. It'd be a very good thing to do. And other pre-clears, you're just rolling along fine, you know what you're doing, and so forth, and you put in a communication bridge in about 40 seconds. Okay? It's whim-wham. But you're in a good agreement, you know, about the thing. The ARC is right there with it, but you still use all of its parts. Even though it only took you 40 seconds to put in that communication bridge, you still used every part it's got. You stopped one process. You as-ised anything it might have done. You got him into present time with regard to you and the reality of what you're doing. And then you, good warning, you made an agreement with him about the new process. And then you started to run it. And that's the communication bridge. That's brand new and actually prevents your PC from getting stuck in sessions. Now that PCs can come up on communication bridges, you're starting to find that that running out old sessions seems to be rather easy. Isn't that an oddity? The fellow now recognizes a solved problem, and the fellow who's been audited a lot, he recognizes that you're doing something different, and therefore he will trust you to touch these old sores, scabs, and wounds of suddenly shifted processes, of unfinished comm lags. See? And he says, this is a good auditor. You know, I can trust this auditor. That's because his power of choice and expectancy isn't being overthrown all the time by this auditor. Well, that's an exact anatomy, that communication bridge. And, of course, it's all right for you to simply feel it and feel esoteric and aesthetic about the whole thing, but the fact of the matter is it has awfully, awfully harshly solid parts. The parts are very, very for real, you know. If you dropped them, they'd clank. They're as real as bridge girders, and that's why we call it a communication bridge. And also, because of this great oddity, we said we were going to build a better bridge back in Dianetics, Modern Science and Mental Health, where we're building several types of bridge. We're building a bridge between the PC confused or upset and unable, or relatively unable, to the PC in a good, orderly, tolerant, high level of ability. See, we're building a bridge of gradient scales between those two points, and part of that bridge consists of these little bridges, communication bridges. And every time we fail to put in one of these little communication bridges, we find out on test that we'll have a gap in our big bridge. So the big bridge is built out of processes. But the processes are hung together by little bridges called communication bridges. And the processes do not hang together when the communication bridges are omitted. There is also a little bit bigger bridge than the communication bridge, which is the intercession bridge, the period between the last session and this session. And we do all of its parts. Actually, it's just the expanded parts of a communication bridge. We get the new session started on the basis that we have finished the old session, but we still touch the old session. We still touch it, we go over it, we get the interim period. And part of that intercession bridge, or part of any new session with a new pre-clear, is the present time problem, and that's simply part of that bigger bridge. So we're building a great big bridge, and it's made on a gradient scale of little bridges. And if we do all these very smoothly, why, the pre-clear arrives on a plateau where the view is a little better and the air a little sweeter. All right. We have number 5, which is rising ARC in the PC. Now, although this has been mentioned before and is not entirely new, for the first time it moves out to this degree. It says when the PC got a somatic, there was an ARC break, and that's brand new to this unit. These are materials which were accumulated for quite a while and were being assembled as a package, and you got the full brunt of them immediately and directly as a formally taught situation, which had been well tested and found to stand the stress and strain. And the rising ARC in the preclear. A preclear, ARC rises. Now, I gave you a demonstration of this and had you make the preclear unlook, a process which you knew to be a process which was a good process. Obviously, an individual should be able to disconnect as well as connect. This is obvious, and you went ahead and ran the process, and a lot of you said, well, Ron wouldn't do anything to me, but Ron had told you very, very bluntly, knowing you had already come along and could do a fairly good job of auditing. Ron said, just in so many words, he said, this is not a very therapeutic process. It is not given to you as a therapeutic process, and then I gave it to him, remember? And although nothing much happened that was violent, unremediable, and all that sort of thing, we did get some interesting aspects, didn't we? And we found that we had a few somatics and antagonisms and things like this turning on while running the process, which we hadn't encountered before in the PC. It was a mildly poor process, and your PC was not making progress. He was being run downhill. You made him unlook, and he ran downhill. Now, you've also, completely aside from that one, which you finished up and cleaned up, completely aside from that one, you did this other one. You have noticed that when your PC got a somatic, there was an ARC break with the auditor somewhere earlier. That's brand new. It's non-somatic auditing. That's awfully new, you know. That's quite an advance from old Dianetic days when we threw them into birth. You know, quite different. This one says the PC goes right on upscale, and that if a somatic turned on, the auditor made a boo-boo. And he'd certainly better go back and find out what he did wrong or what went wrong or what caught the preclear's attention off balance in the environment. What caught his attention and confused it? What occurred? Something occurred which the auditor has not taken up. And that was rising ARC. All right. Now, number six was this matter of restarting sessions. The new idea in auditing that a PC could go out of session during session. The rudiments had to be started all over again every time the preclear did this. But we got an explanation of why many cases were not making good progress. They were not making good progress because they were falling out of session. And they were falling out of session because probably of inadequate communication bridges, because of present time problems, because of a lack of ARC with the auditor normally. And the session had to be started all over again. So we learned to check any failure to gain from the viewpoint that a session was not in progress. Although the preclear was there, from our viewpoint, the session was not there from his viewpoint. And so we learned to restart sessions when progress seemed to be poor. Now, this would also obtain when a somatic turned on. The preclear went out of session. Preclears, being well audited, do not get somatics unless they've dropped out of session and started to self-audit. Something on that is close to the truth. That's not an absolutely truthful statement, but it sounds awfully reasonable and probably has a lot to say in its favor. And then we had this business of time continuum, and time continuum became important to us at this time because we had the principle of not knowingness. And time continuum is a consecutive series of postulates proceeding from a basic postulate on any subject. And out of this we get universes. The definition of a universe is that body of space and energy which has in common a time. And so a time continuum is built out of a series of postulates. An agreed-upon time continuum is a specialized kind of time continuum. You yourself, all by yourself, can have a time continuum. But then when you get it agreed upon with somebody else, you get an agreed-upon time continuum, and that's harder to break down. And then you get a mutual universe. And in essence, you really get a universe, as we understand the physical universe. That's how we get a physical universe. We get a consecutive series of postulates which are agreed upon. And we have then time in common. And having this time in common, we have actually a bit of a universe. Now, anybody who has been auditing a PC over a certain period of time has a universe, by definition, with that PC, you see. If the PC and the auditor are in good ARC, that universe has the solidity of... It doesn't have any great solidity. It's a pleasant universe, but it has no solidity. And it is retained... Without regret or upset or something like that, and a fellow feels better to have had the association with the auditor. It's a universe that he can carry around. It's still in total agreement. It has its own time track. It has everything, you see, but it has no liability to the pre-clear whatsoever. He isn't stuck in it. He is there by his own choice. The ARC is good, and he isn't living in it every day as they wanted in psychoanalysis. You had to be in the analyst universe, no. It's something that is completely light, airy. He spent some time with an auditor. He's glad of it. That's the solidity of this universe. Not very solid. So it's not necessarily true that a universe is a bad universe, but a universe which is based on overthrown power of choice and agreement by duress would then be pretty solid and pretty doggone difficult to live with. So we get some PCs, reactive minds, as being very difficult affairs, and it's simply a collection of time continua which have become a bit solid one way or the other, and which he regrets he has around. He's sorry he lived in the universe himself and the old man on the boat. He's sorry he lived in that universe. He's sorry he lived in the universe of Hades. He's sorry he lived in the universe of the I Will Arise Society. He's sorry he lived, see, he doesn't like the universe. And it's just his consideration about the time continuum, too, that makes this a fact. But having found how to split universes, this doesn't much make any difference. What could you disagree with is a process which would be akin to, what could you go out of ARC with, which would be akin to, what could you unlook from? And that's a series of unworkable processes. What could you go out of agreement with? Doesn't run. What could you go out of ARC with? It's the same thing, since agreement is reality. That won't run. And this other one, what could you unlook from? That won't run. The reason these don't run is there is no such thing as a superabundance of communication, too much abundance of communication. It's always too scarce. Communication is too scarce, never too much. This is a great oddity, and the feeling that communication can be too much then keeps an individual from running out all of the universe in connection with it. So we have two ways to break up a time continuum. One is simply remedy all its scarcities of communication. Now, this is really not a new idea to the Fourth London ACC, since it's still in step 4 of SOP 8. And we have ways of remedying it in there. We had them waste things and so forth. Actually, what are we trying to do? We're trying to get people to communicate further and with more. But we have a new look at this now. We say just bluntly and without any further reservation that there cannot be an overabundance of communication, that all aberration proceeds from too little communication. And you say, you mean I'm crazy because I refuse to communicate with buzzsaws? You mean I'm crazy because I won't put my head into buzzsaws? The funny part of it is, the factual answer to it is, that's right. What is the idea of being unable to tolerate your head going through a buzzsaw? And what's the matter with you anyhow that you can't mock up a new head? Got the idea? Well, that's what's the matter with him. That's why he won't put his head into a buzzsaw. But a failure to communicate with buzzsaws limits his communication, limits his livingness, And it certainly gives him a game one way or the other. And sooner or later, he'll overrun this game, and one day he'll just won't be able to stand it, and he'll be able to slip and drop his head into a buzzsaw. See? It's dropping his head into a buzzsaw without his power of choice being exercised versus being able to put his head in a buzzsaw. See? So we never have an overabundance of communication. If you want to solve any problem in the entire field of aberration or human relations, put more communication into it. And it seems to be directly contrary to some of your experience. You say, this dog over there is asleep. He is a mad dog. He is liable to bite me, and so forth. What is the idea of saying that more communication with that dog will wake up the dog? Well, we're failing to differentiate between a game and a completely clear look. What is the idea of being in something a dog can bite? You get the idea. This is different. It's the fact that you are afraid of the dog's bitingness that cuts down your communication on the dog. The truth of the matter is, in the practical course of events, the proper way to handle the dog is not be careful of the dog and move around the dog, but to really communicate with ARC to the dog. Remember, old Brother Daniel moved into that lion's den. Those lions were hungry, and they said, "Oh, that's Daniel. Hiya, Daniel." Get the idea? If you want to do miracles, communicate. It's about the end of it. All right. So communication itself would blow up these time continua. Communication as is, one of these fixed time continua, blows up, disappears, and goes away on communication alone. But we have another method, and this method is a pat method. This method is a fast method. We cannot know. It isn't disagree, as I just said to you. We can't run that. Won't run, so on. But we cannot know. And this is the rehabilitation of the Thetan's ability to not know. And we rehabilitate this ability to postulate this thing. And we find him splitting off from these time continua. And you can break him off from any time continuum by getting him to tell you what he can not know about that time continuum. That's can, space, not know, with a hyphen between them, about that particular universe. Of course, he looks at things he knows, and he says he can afford to not know that. And the next thing you know, rip, and he split a universe. He split the time continua of the universe, which is more important than breaking the universe off from him. You have two ways to handle a universe. One is learn to live in one. And the other one's to throw it away. You won't throw away any universe till you can build one. So you want to get out of this physical universe? Well, get hot enough so that you can build one. All right. What do you mean not being able to build a physical universe? 9 is new in this unit, energy and terminal running. Spotting energy sources until the individual is no longer fighting against, trying to get out of communication with, and trying to have a hard time with the subject of energy. He, to a large degree, likes energy. He can communicate with any part of energy or any kind of energy, and he has considerations which reserve these parts of energy as being uncommunicable, and the thing and result of all of this is that his power to communicate is cut down because he says there's various kinds of energy. They're bad. Therefore, I cannot communicate because I can't use these types of energy with which to communicate. And an individual who can use all types of energy to communicate, from 16-inch shells through rage right up to love, you see, he can use all types, and he could communicate and still make a good impression with it. Boy, he's an artist. Now, we solve the whole problem in this 4th London ACC of the granting of beingness. The granting of beingness is, by definition, and this, by the way, I haven't mentioned to you, but it should have been mentioned in passing, the granting of beingness is the allowance of the existence of another terminal. Failure to grant beingness is failure to admit the existence of another terminal. If you can admit the existence of another terminal, you're granting beingness. If you're failing to, you're not granting beingness, and that is its anatomy, and you can take the esoterics out of it. All right. We have 10, power of choice. And this we have yet to some degree cover in this particular unit. But we have the rehabilitation as power of choice. And we've given some lectures on this, which is a fundamental of aberration. When an individual's power choice has been too often overthrown, the individual himself can be considered to be aberrated. The thing best to aberrate in the individual be power choice, above power of choice, is decision concerning exact situations, and above that is postulates. The rehabilitation of a person's ability to make postulates lies first in the rehabilitation of his power of choice, second in his rehabilitation of decision, and third, then, the postulate. So an individual's ability to make postulates is going to be very bad if his power of choice is poor. And we have 11, a very vast subject which the world could well afford more of, tolerance of stupidity. The auditor's intolerance of the communication lags of the preclear are not just waitingness intolerances, they are intolerances of his stupidity, intolerance of his ability to remain stupid. The preclear doesn't make a cognition, the auditor sitting there saying, oh my God, he can't recognize. The auditor figures out the preclear's whole case. Well, the funny part of it is that's the auditor's business. The preclear doesn't figure out his whole case, that's why he's still a preclear. The auditor sits there and says, well, I know exactly what's wrong with this fella. He's in his grandmother's valence, and he's doing this, and he's doing that, and the stable data on this other, he must be so-and-so and so-and-so, and boy, this is for the birds. This is gorgeous. And he sits there and says, well, now, why is it? He's just got through telling you. He says, my mother had eczema, and my grandmother had eczema, but my grandmother died from eczema. And you say, that's fine. And he's got eczema, you see. He's just told you this, and you say, now, why do you suppose you have eczema? Something of the sort. And he says, I don't know, you suppose it's my diet? He says, seems to be kind of heredity, doesn't it? And you say, no, now, did you really like your grandmother? Did you feel bad when she died? Oh, yes, terrible. Now, what did your grandmother die of? Well, she died of eczema. When did you get eczema? Oh, the next day. What do you suppose is the cause of your eczema? I don't know. Sometimes I thought it was the water. By this time, saying, eek! It's his inability to consider that is throwing him. Now, more widely on this same pyramid is number 12. Stupidity is just the top of this pyramid of untolerated randomity. And we have the ARC triangle, above which stands understanding, above which stands knowingness, and above this stands ability to postulate, and above that native state. We get number 12, tolerances of motion and no motion, and the intolerance of confusion and lack of confusion. And we've gone into that considerably. And this is the basic anatomy of the upsets in the preclear's life. It's what he can handle, what he can't handle. And then 13, we get decisional processing, and that really was part of number 10, power of choice. We rehabilitate the ability to make decisions of the part of the preclear. We get him to choose things, then we get him to decide things. Well, this whole schedule of getting him to decide things becomes a whole process, decisional processing, on which we have very lightly touched a couple of times. Number 14, we talked about specialized language. The reason why some people are not able to understand Scientology is simply that they haven't learned the definition of its words, and they're trying to find out what the Japanese are talking about by learning Sanskrit. And the other reason why they haven't is because their earlier data has been thrown into a confusion by Scientology. And these two conditions should be remedied to rehabilitate the ability of a Scientologist. These are the two things you must really grind in. This could be done during Indoctrination Week rather easily. We don't let Scientology knock out all their stable data. We let them, so that Scientology orient their former areas of learning, and at the same time, we make sure that they know that vocabulary and what it means, because there's only a few words in it. And 15 is Scientology's new meaning and the restabilizing of other professions by use of Scientology instead of using Scientology to unstabilize other professions, sciences, groups, and learnings of man. We covered that rather thoroughly And it's something that I really expect you to know. The new meaning of Scientology would, of course, be science of life or science of orienting livingness, how to know about livingness. You could say, well, Scientology is the science of aligning sciences. It is the science which is used to clarify and align sciences. If you were to tell a government this, they would really be impressed. They'd say, well, Scientology is something, it's a modus operandi, and it's a science itself by which you would realign nuclear physics. It's by which you would realign educational science and so forth. It is actually a mathematics of science. You could even go more esoteric if you're trying to upstage them and says it lies considerably above symbolic logic and topology. The new idea that Scientology is an organization without much body, and that if we knock out all the bodies there are in the society, there will be no bodies for the Scientologist to occupy, is fairly new to this unit. All right, we reviewed these materials. I hope this fast review has not thrown you into any particular confusion, but I hope at the same time it has given you a fast look at the material you have picked up and that I hope you know and understand and has been given to you so that you will have the opportunity of asking questions which would clarify any of this material if it is not clear with you and has been given to you so that you can ask for replays of specific lectures which cover this material. Thank you.